Good day, listening public. Today is May 15th, 2020, and thank you for listening to General Disclosure, a podcast from SAN. My name is Dan Silverman, and I'm joined, as always, by co-host Cheryl Dowd. Cheryl, do you copy?
Hi, how are you all today?
Today, we're very lucky to be joined by Emily Woods, the Distance Learning Compliance Coordinator at the University of Kentucky. Emily, how are you?
I am great. Good to be with you guys.
All right. So we start this off with the same two questions every time, which is defining your career, however you define it. Why do you do this?
Yeah. So you mean like what I do here as a compliance person? Sorry.
Sure. If that's how you want to define it, or you can define it as higher ed administration, you could define it as regulatory compliance, you can apply whatever identity you would like to choose for this conversation.
All right. Yeah. So I actually started off as an instructor teaching English language. And after that, started really being interested in the administrative workings of higher education, how everything kind of came together in chaos, the chaos of higher education, but it's kind of, I call it the beautiful chaos, the policy and the compliance elements kind of came out of that. I am a policy nerd. And love tracking with negotiated rulemakings and regulations. So I just kind of fell into this lovely role of a compliance coordinator, and I love it.
Are there other higher ed compliance that you like to follow other than this stuff?
Yeah, so very interested in Title IX compliance, and it really focused on compliance that deals with diversity issues and educational equity issues. So how are we helping students maybe from minority backgrounds, lower socioeconomic backgrounds, and how are we giving them a chance to access higher education? So those are some of my side research interests.
If higher ed were to vaporize overnight, what would you do instead?
Oh, vaporize overnight. That's an interesting image. Oh, I would probably on the road playing music. I am on the side, I play piano and sing and really enjoy playing in bands. So that would be my alternative career.
Well, perhaps we will try to help utilize that even before higher ed were to vaporize. we've been talking about adding a little musical start to this podcast. And if you recall from most recent coordinator call, I did play one chord on my ukulele as the opener to that one. So maybe if we add to a second chord, we'll give you a call.
There we go.
So one of the things that really motivated us to have you talk today, to come onto the show today, is the two interviews that you recently did with some licensure compacts. There was the National Administrators at this compact. So there was the National Association of State Directors of Teacher Education and Certification and the Nursing Licensure Compact. And we will put a link to those conversations in the show notes, as they say. But I want to ask a couple of specific questions about that experience and what you learned. But first, what would be in 30, we'll give you 75 seconds. What would be a licensure compact 101?
Yeah, so compacts are, you know, are organizations that attempt to pull together the different licensure boards of different states. And those, maybe not even licensure, it could be trucking or waterways, but it's some kind of agreement between multiple states that they all agree to the same set of standards, so that it's easier for citizens of those states to be able to do the same kind of activities from one state to another, bypassing a lot of regulations that perhaps each individual state might have. So that is kind of like the basics of compacts.
Do they tend more utility for people who are already licensed rather than in the pre-licensure stages or not?
They definitely are focused on professionals who are already licensed, but some compacts do allow some pre-licensure, like maybe recent graduates, to be able to apply to a state perhaps easier than what would have been before the compact existed. So for example, the teacher's compact, actually before the compact existed, it would be a lot harder for a student graduate to go to another state to become licensed than after the compact came into existence, actually made mobility a lot easier.
What was the
Could I follow up with a question on that, though?
Yeah, absolutely.
Anytime, jump in anytime.
What I was wondering is, does the student then have to complete the license in that state and then be able to be have the access to the other state, or is this something that is prior to them obtaining the license in the first state?
Yeah, so there are two routes for teachers. Really two general routes for teachers, I should say. It can be, there's always side routes. But the first one that is almost always encouraged is that the student, when they graduate, becomes licensed in their own state. And then through the compact, it allows the student to move easier between the states. You could have a student graduate who decides, I don't want to be licensed in the state where my institution is. I just want to go straight to the state. That makes it a lot more complicated, and the compact doesn't quite help that route as much. So that's a good clarification.
It's really interesting how that works, because in law, it's interesting you talk about compacts. There are some agreements between some states that they can sit for the bar at two places at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So they can, you know, it's either a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Wednesday, Thursday exam, multi-state on the Wednesday, and then take the two state portions on Tuesday and Thursday to try to help facilitate. But it's still very interesting how, as you mentioned, they all operate very differently.
Yes.
So it's very important for the institutions to be very aware of the aspects of these different compacts. I appreciate you clarifying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that is a really important thing to note, is that each compact acts differently, and how, once you're used to one, don't assume that another compact is going to act exactly like that compact.
What was the most surprising thing you learned from each interview?
Oh, wow. So much of it was the background of these compacts and how they were coming together. I did not realize that the Council for State Government, which is currently organizing a lot of different licensure compacts in different fields, is actually based in Lexington, Kentucky, where I'm located. I had no idea. So that was kind of a surprise to me. The other thing that I learned is how much the Department of Defense and the Department of Labor are very interested in the development of these compacts. So it's not just something that higher education institutions and individual licensing organizations are interested in. A lot of it has to do with the mobility of military spouses. The Department of Defense is pouring lots of funding and support into the development of these compacts. So a lot of political movement happening.
This is Cheryl. It's been very interesting to watch that. I'm glad you brought that up. It's been very interesting to watch about what the transport of a license, you know, can look like, because it does. It keeps you very stuck, if you will, if you're not able to bring your license and there's some sort of movement in this mobile society. But again, we're still talking about transporting that something that's already licensed. And, you know, I'm really hoping that that organization, as you've been talking about, will start thinking more about how do we work with the different boards to address pre-licensure in a more dynamic manner in the way that they're starting to do with post-licensure.
Absolutely.
How did you pick these two compacts to focus on, and were there any that you wished you'd been able to connect with?
Yeah. Oh, it was really hard. I kind of had five in mind, but these two, education, nursing, seem to be, as I talk to other institutions, the two top ones, the top interests, I should say, that I was hearing about. So I kind of picked those two. But at the same time, I would love to eventually connect with the counseling boards. I think counseling and psychology are the next two that I've heard a lot of chatter on in the listservs and from different institutions I've talked to. And as I've done licensure research in those areas, it's another very complex compact, the way the compacts work, the way the licensure field works. So if I was to take on another one, counseling or psychology would be next.
What are the ways that you keep your ear to the ground or keep in touch with other colleagues at other institutions about this stuff?
Yeah, SAN has been super helpful. The WCT Mix listserv has been very helpful in seeing what other institutions are doing. I do have some connections that I made at NASAPS, and we kind of keep connected, just asking each other if something comes up. We'll send an email, hey, do you have this issue, and are you facing this challenge, and they can give some feedback. So a lot of informal networks, but I will say a shout out to you all. SAN has been super helpful.
Thank you. I was not aiming for that in my question.
Well, it was coming your direction. It was coming your, and I do say it often.
So. Well, thank you.
No, but we're truly curious because the informal interactions within our network and is what keeps it strong, and we're always curious to know what those are because we don't hear about that as much as we'd like. So that's why whenever I hear that, I think I do try to ask a couple of follow-ups to find out what you guys are doing because we want to know. And then by extension, if there's anything that we can do to help facilitate those, please do let us know. And that kind of leads to my next question was, did this experience, we should say to our listeners out there, our, you know, all of our friends and family who may not be familiar with the special interest team, the SAN SIT, which is kind of on professional licensure, which is kind of where this project came from. Did your experience with that SIT give you any ideas for further collaborations, formal or informal?
Yeah, the SIT team has been, oh my goodness, it's been a really great resource in terms of collaboration, encouragement, just times when we're all really curious about how each other is tackling the licensure disclosure research, how to handle posting of licensure disclosures. I think there is a lot of new ideas that have come out of the group that I really think in the future would be great. I know we've talked about just asking how we can be a resource to other institutions that may not be part of networks yet, like those informal networks or maybe who are brand new to this. And just being kind of, how can we be a resource or a soundboard for institutions who just have questions about how do I do this? Where do I start? Who do I talk to? And where do I find this information? So I hope that answered your question.
Definitely. Cheryl, do you have any follow-ups on this?
No, this has been super helpful because I think there, you know, just like the paper, and I just want to give a shout out to the work that you and the special interest team did on a recent white paper to discuss the myths and the facts around compacts, because, you know, a lot of folks hear about them, but they don't really understand the workings. And so you all were very clear in your direction about those. And so, and I know that some of that came from your experiences with the interview. So I am just really thrilled with the work you all were able to share on that, because I think it's super helpful for people who are trying to manage this work.
Great. Well, it was a really great experience putting that together.
Well, have I missed anything, Emily? Is there something else about this project that you'd want to explain or pass along?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely encourage those who deal with the nursing and education compacts and licensure research. I would definitely encourage you to look at those resources, to look at the website resources that both compacts provide. There's just so much information. But I also want to throw out an encouragement for institutions to really take advantage of the opportunities to network with other institutions. Reach out, see what others are doing. You're not in this alone. I've been there at the beginning when, you know, our institution had absolutely no process or anything, and what that felt like. And it really does help if you reach out and connect with other institutions.
Well, thank you so much, Emily.
That's great advice.
It's great. It is great advice. And given that we've been talking so much about professional licensure on this episode, I'm going to go ahead and move forward with my third favorite segment of this show, as always, the regulation of the month, or a few months, as the case may be. So some of you might know that the Washington Board of Clinical Psychology gets into the pedagogy, not just the content of the courses. So it talks about a doctoral degree program having a certain amount of contact between student and faculty in the form of group educational meeting. And then it goes on to define group educational meetings. I'll give you part of it. They must include both faculty, student, and student-student interaction. It must be conducted by the psychology faculty of the institution at least 75% of the time, be fully documented by the institution and the applicant, and relate substantially to the program components specified. So again, if you are and that is for those of you who are trying to follow along with me at home, that's Washington Administrative Code 246-924-046. So that's interesting to me because we talk about trying to figure out, my courses, if I'm looking to advise students on whether a particular clinical psychology doctorate would meet the requirements of Washington, not only am I going to have to look at the content of the courses, but the way they are taught. Just shows how tricky this all can be. We'll now move on to everybody's favorite segment, Cheryl on musicals.
Okay.
So Cheryl, we've covered a lot of ground recently on some of your preferences and recommendations, but I'm gonna go a slightly different track here today to talk about what about if you, Cheryl, could have any job in musical theater, what would it be?
Oh my goodness. Well, I have absolutely no talent whatsoever. So I'm an aficionado. So I would say probably I would love to, I would like to manage a theater. I think that's what I would want to do, to bring talent in, promote them, you know, doing, that's the kind of work that I would be able to do, because I don't have any specific performance skills that would benefit, anyone wanting to see it.
But more, it sounds like more the business side of the house. In other words, you don't want to be the prop person.
No, I have, as a parent of a child who did a lot of theater, I've done a lot of volunteering, and which meant promotions. I've done a lot of backstage dressing, you know, which is tricky. I had all of the Von Trapp children to dress during The Sound of Music, and they changed their clothes a lot. But I actually would be more in the management side, I think I would like.
Now, have you during COVID, with all the theaters dark, have you found any replacements?
Or seen? Oh, yes.
I know you love to do that.
So, you know, and those of you that follow the Friday night or Friday afternoon WCET notices will note that Russ has done a variety of things with his movie posts, and some of them have been around the idea of what's streaming, since we all aren't getting to movie theaters. And so we've been streaming theater opportunities. And so there are several platforms that have theater that was recorded. So the Newsies was recorded on stage in a Los Angeles theater. So you can find that on Disney Plus. There are several other on Broadway HD. And then each week, one of Andrew Lloyd Webber's musicals has been released for 48 hours on YouTube. And so those have been to raise money for the Actors Fund. And so there have been a variety of live theater that has been filmed, so it's not actually live when we're seeing it, but at least it kind of fills in somewhat of a gap until we have live theater again.
What's the key for a particular production to translate well to being filmed?
Oh, well, it's really interesting that you say that, because I went down the rabbit hole of watching YouTube videos about how Newsies was filmed, and they were talking about how they went through the show pieces many, many, many times because it was being recorded by a number of cameras. And so it does kind of take some of it out of, you know, if you're just having somebody with their camera in front of the stage, you're not catching all the pieces. What they tried to record was, you know, definite visuals, definite choreography pieces to enhance the viewing. So it wasn't just, you know, a recording from somebody sitting in the center of the orchestra looking at the stage. So it was designed to be recorded.
Emily, you've mentioned you have a musical background. Have you ever either played in an orchestra or performed in a musical of any sort?
Well, I was in choir for 4 years, which was an amazing experience. And it, in terms of the musical theater world, I always enjoyed watching it, and I always thought that I would be great up on stage until I took a drama class and found out otherwise. So I definitely love performing musically and enjoy watching musicals, and had many friends do musicals in high school, but never participated myself.
What happened?
That's really interesting. Dan, can I ask her a follow-up on that, please?
Of course, always.
With you having taken the acting class, did you then find that you are more critical when watching others on stage because you've learned a little bit and you're, you know, seeing what the effort is that they're putting into certain aspects of their performance?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, and the funny thing is like, I loved my drama instructor, but she pointed out, she was a great director and pointed out every detail and critique that there could be. So I always kind of had her voice in the back of my mind every time I watched a musical.
There you go. Cause you're looking at the blocking. You're looking, yeah. You want to know why the story is being told that way. I love it.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Dan.
A little bit of knowledge can be kind of dangerous.
It can.
Well, I think that's probably as good of a place as any to leave it for today. So Emily Woods, thank you so much for coming.
Absolutely, thank you.
And Cheryl, always good to host these with you. And our listeners out there, we really do hope that's a plural. We will see you next month with another guest to be conjured up.
Thanks, everybody, and thank you, Dan. Thanks, Emily, for being with us.
Absolutely, thank you.